The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the March-April issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go right to the NFL to one of its more outstanding players, somebody who's trending, Cooper Kupp of the Los Angeles Rams. Written off as too small in high school, the Super Bowl MVP went into the laboratory and built himself into one of the most dangerous players in the NFL. Last spring, Cooper Kupp moved to a Portland suburb and transformed a backyard tennis court into a barn that doubled as a football laboratory. The goal was to explore the science that drives elite receivers and figure out how he could use that information to make himself better. Kupp had turf put in by the same expert that local sports teams used. He added a curved treadmill for speed work, a timing gate that measured his velocity in seconds and miles per hour, and a towing unit, which he wore while sprinting to add resistance, usually more than 100 pounds. With his plan in place and his barn constructed, Kupp drilled into as many movement options, wiggles, cuts, stutter steps as he could. He would take into account variables such as defensive alignments and schemes, skills, weaknesses, and body language of defenders, weather, playing surface, and equipment. He used GPS data to determine when he reached his max velocity, approximately 25 yards downfield, 5 yards quicker than normal. Kupp would go on to lead the NFL in catches, 145, receiving yards, 1,947, and TD receptions, 16 in the regular season. He then capped off his postseason with an MVP performance in Super Bowl 56, which the Rams won over the Bengals, 23-20. It was a most unlikely season. Teammates describe him as borderline brilliant. But early in his career, he was discounted. He ran such a glacial 40-yard dash at the 2017 NFL Scouting Combine that his time of 4.62 seconds was matched by a punter. Football in his genes. Kupp's grandfather, Jake, grew up on a farm in Yakima, Washington, city east of Seattle. On hot summer days, he settled under a peach tree, lying down and looking up. He visualized an impossible future, playing baseball for the Yankees. He did become a professional athlete, although in football, in which he played 12 seasons for four franchises, earning a Pro Bowl nod while with the Saints. Jake returned to Yakima and passed the dream gene to his son Craig, who carved out his own NFL career as a backup quarterback with the three teams. Both men nourished Cooper's dreams. Jake read him The Little Engine That Could. Craig told Cooper he could do anything he wanted. Indeed, Cooper had bigger dreams. When he developed an ulcer in sixth grade, his family and coaches wondered, with little else to explain the diagnosis, whether Cooper simply cared too much about making it to the NFL. Did he really need to wear ankle weights all day long? Did he absolutely have to befriend the school's custodian so he could access the weight room at all hours? With no major college offers, Kupp went to Eastern Washington. Playing in the FCS, Kupp elevated his NFL prospects against NFL-caliber defenders, dominating Oregon State in 2013. 5 receptions, 119 yards, and 2 touchdowns in his college debut. Washington in 2014, 8-14 and 145-3. Oregon in 2015, 15 catches, 246 yards, 3 touchdowns. And Washington State in 2016, 12 receptions, 206 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Still, Kupp was smallest kid who carried a tennis ball everywhere, throwing and catching it to improve his coordination. The Rams took him in the third round in 2017. After 1.5 solid seasons, Kupp tore his ACL during the 2018 campaign. While rebuilding his body, Cup shifted the extra time he would have spent on practice toward an immersive study aimed to make him a better blocker, an act many receivers disdained. Cup embraced the hand-to-hand combat because it meant more snaps and more confusion for defenses that could guess pass attempt upcoming when he trotted onto the field. He added muscle without losing speed, measuring his movement after early every ounce he gained until he weighed 208 pounds. He peppered left tackle Andrew Whitworth for advice on angles, leverage, and the geometry necessary to apply brute force. The result was back-to-back 90-catch seasons. But Cup wasn't satisfied, which led him to his football lab. Using the data he accumulated, Cup was able to increase his burst off the line. When he sent his father videos of his acceleration, his quicker first step leaped off the screen. Everyone else started to see what Cup long ago envisioned. "This is going to be a historic year," his mom, Karen, predicted. She was right. After Cup won the receiving Triple Crown, he turned in a Super Bowl performance for the ages. After catching a TD pass in the first half, he had four receptions on the Rams' game-winning drive, including the clinching one-yard score. He also contributed a seven-yard run on a crucial fourth-down play. "Whatever it is, I just want to execute my job to the best of my ability," Cup said. "I trust that as the game goes on, I will have opportunities, and I just want to stay ready for those things. Stay locked in." Cup finished with eight catches for 92 yards. "It's been just the perfect team, the perfect setup," he said. "I'm just so thankful for everyone that's been around me. It still really hasn't hit me." Good job, Cooper Cup. End zone. Number one, monkeying around. The monkeys are playing the simians in baseball at the SI Kids Treehouse. See it on page 31. The monkeys have Cornelius on first, Rocket on third, and Caesar up to bat. The simians pitcher, Maurice, is paying particularly close attention to Cornelius at first. Rocket takes off in an attempt to steal home. The catcher, Zayas, jumps out of his stance, calling for Maurice to throw home. Before Maurice can figure out what is happening, however, Zayas runs into Caesar and they tumble to the ground in the right-handed batter's box. With the path to home obstructed, Rocket stopped and is tagged out by Maurice. The monkeys hooed and hollered that they were going to score. The simians are bleating about batter's interference. What's the call? Do 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 do. The answer, what's the call? If the catcher steps in front of home plate without the ball or touches the batter or his bat during a steal of home, a balk is called. The run scores. The batter goes to first, and the play is dead. All right, next one, number two. Another happy landing. In a lacrosse game between the Hamilton Hawks and the Gentinel Gazelles, Hawks attacker Tanner Ellis drives toward the Gazelles' net. After fooling one defender with a face dodge, Ellis finds himself one-on-one with Gatineau, goalie Michael Towles. Ellis takes a high shot and then dives across the crease, slipping the ball past Tews low. When he finally lands, Ellis is inside the crease but behind the net. Tews called for a crease violation. Is the goal allowed? Do 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 do. Answer to number two. After a goal is scored, the shooter is allowed to land in the goal crease, but not the goal mouth, a 6-inch radius above the goal line. And finally, we have glitched goal. The State University Reds are playing the Big Tech Blues in a basketball game under the NCAA rules. Reds point guard Jess Abara is at the free throw line. She sinks her first shot. The second try, however, gets lodged between the hoop and the backboard and comes to rest motionless on the back of the rim. In the confusion, Big Tech's Gwen Goff jumps up and grabs the ball. The Blues think they have a possession. The Red protest that Goff can't grab a rebound if the ball never bounced off anything. You're the referee. What's the call? Do 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 The answer? When the ball comes to rest on the flange, the area between the hoop and the backboard, the ball is dead, and possession is awarded based on the possession arrow. Okay. Well, how about the mystery athlete today? Here's clue one. Despite being too young to compete at the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, the mystery athlete placed in that year's X Games taking a silver medal. Clue two. The mystery athlete appeared in Sports Illustrated for Kids at age 14 as a Sports Kid of the Year finalist. And clue number three. 4 years after winning her first Olympic gold medal in the halfpipe at Pyeongchang, the mystery athlete repeated at this year's games, posting a score of 94-0-0 on her first run. The mystery athlete is Chloe Kim. Did you guess that? If you did, good job. All right. The mystery challenge is trivia challenge. The Bengals' Jamar Chase took home AP Offensive Rookie of the Year honors this season, making him just the second wide receiver in the past decade to do so. Who was the last wide receiver to win the award before Chase? Was it Odell Beckham Jr.? Was it Stephon Diggs? Or was it Randy Moss? Well, if you pick letter A, Odell Beckham, you are correct. How about some Buzz Beamer information? Hey, Whitney, with my quick eagle eye, I bet I could be an official in any sport. And it shows the two shooting baskets, Buzz and Whitney. Well, which sports? Well, tennis maybe. Awesome, dude. You're supposed to discourage such behavior. So we hear one of the tennis players is banging his racket on the floor, and Buzz is like, that's awesome, dude. And the other official says, hey, no. You're supposed to discourage such behavior. Well, baseball umpire is a natural fit. So it seems has Buzz Beamer on some stilts. And talking to the catcher, hey, I got to see over you somehow. Well, it's football. I wouldn't want to be running around the football field with those NFL dudes, but I would be excellent on the chain gang. So, has him in some actual chains. No, Bump. Buzz, and the official is like, no. Well, how about in basketball? I would be best at making calls related to feet. Two-pointer. When the person shooting his three-pointer is just on the line. Okay, Buzz. I'll need some protection from pucks and sticks to call a hockey game. Stop banking your shots off me. Buzz. You need to face reality. you're not so much eagle-eyed as bird-brained. That's it. I'm throwing a flag for unsportsmanlike conduct. But she may have told the truth. Let's have some review. Let's go back to page 9. The warm-up. Hot take. Belongs in a museum if the point of Cooperstown is to unite generations over a shared history. Why leave a certain era stars out? Let's take over the hall. Don't look now, but the old people are fighting. The sports writers over 50 have declared war on their 30 and 40-year-old colleagues. And they're winning. In January, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens failed to reach the 75% voting threshold for Baseball Hall of Fame admittance. On their 10th and final appearance on the ballot, they now have to hope they will be selected by a committee, and something that could happen this year, but is more likely to happen later, if ever. Bonds and Clemens appeared on 66% and 65.2% respectively of the 394 ballots submitted this time. When they first came up for voting in 2013, Clemens got just 37.6% and Bonds 36.2%. It's normal for players to pick up steam as the years go by and their candidates get debated. But no one needs to make a statistical case for these two. Since Babe Ruth retired, no hitter has more wins above replacement than Bonds, 162.7. No other pitcher outside the dead ball era boasts a higher war than Clemens at 139.2. They are possibly the two greatest baseball players of all time, and for many they are also the game's two most infamous cheaters. More than changing minds, Bonds and Clemens' slow climb reflected turnover in the ranks of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Younger, statistically minded voters who grew up looking up to these guys as superheroes have replaced older writers who remember the players of the steroid era as unscrupulous record stealers. According to its website, the Hall of Fame's mission is to preserve the sport's history, honor, excellence within the game, and make a connection between the generation of people who enjoy baseball. And how better to make a connection between generations than to foster a decades-long culture war over steroids? One generation, however, is noticeably absent from this conversation. Ours. A photo accompanies that mission statement on the Hall of Fame's website. In it, a group of kids are gathered around a mannequin displaying one of Babe Ruth's uniforms. Let's be real. When a museum talks about fostering connections between the generations, they don't mean between co-workers at sports media companies who disagree about who the all-time home run king is. They're talking about parents bonding with kids over the love of their favorite sport. Put more simply, the Baseball Hall of Fame is for the kids. That's why, as the self-appointed cartoon representative of all baseball-loving youth, I have some demands on how our hall be run in the future. Number one, let the alleged cheaters in. The traditionalists have won the battle, but they're losing the war. The old guard kept a handful of players out as a parting shot, like 300 Spartans defending the pass of Thermopylae against an inevitable Persian invasion, except way less heroic, glamorous, or otherwise impressive. After all, I know what's really going on. The odds and olders only rehash the tired Barry Bonds versus Ted Williams debate because they're not ready to admit that Mike Trout has already surpassed them both. They're both ignoring that the game has moved on. Barry Bonds is ancient history. The time between he hit his 500th home run and today is the same number of the years as between the end of World War I and the start of World War II. So put him in the museum already. Number two, create a young-timers committee. There exist various veterans committees who consider the apostasy of people who have been overlooked for one reason or another. But too often, like the one in the case of people like Mark McGuire, you're just asking the same generation of voters for the same answer twice. To get a truly fresh perspective, get some fans too young to have seen any of these guys play. I'm proposing a group of kids who will review statistics, YouTube videos, and old press clippings to see who stands out. We'll submit a few names, and in the spirit of proper parental supervision, give a Veterans Committee limited veto power. Return my letters. Why am I not voting in the regular season of fame elections along with other big-name writers? If the Baseball Writers Association of America would have just admitted me in the first place, I wouldn't have had to propose this whole scheme. Is this about that one hot take I promised not to mention anymore? I told Tom Verducci, I'm sorry. I'm a real writer. I have fan mail. Page 61, I'm not asking to be an inductee. I just want to vote. Let me in. April birthdays. April 6th, United States women's national tennis midfielder Julie Ertz celebrates her 30th birthday. April 10th, Liverpool winger Sadio Mane also turns 30 this month. April 21st, Cavaliers center Jared Allen is 24 years old. April 23rd, American snowboarder Chloe Kim is 22. And April 24th, Penguins defenseman Chris Letang has 35 years and 900 NHL games under his belt. Remember Caitlin Jong, future star? Her birthplace is Allen, Texas. Her birth date is July 28, 2006, and her sport, gymnastics. Underneath a cool, calm exterior, Caitlin Jong still gets anxious. You never have known it watching her complete a standing full, a twisting backflip on the balance beam for the first time last May. I try my best to keep my composure, Caitlin says. I don't think about anything else that might distract me. In 2021, she won four golds, team all around, vault and uneven bars, and a silver on the beam at the Junior Pan American Championships. A United States national team member, she will make the jump to senior level competition this year. Are you a sports kid? If you think you have what it takes to be a future star, have an adult submit your nomination at sportskids@si.com. Twist of fate. From defying death to not pulling the trigger on a trade, fortune smiled on these teams and players. Best of luck. Lucky Penny. A little draft lottery luck can change a franchise's fortunes. A lot of draft lottery luck can set it up for decades. Before the 1992 NBA draft, the Magic won the first pick after having the second worst record during the regular season. They drafted Shaquille O'Neal and improved dramatically from a 61-loss team to a 500 squad. That's what made it so surprising when they won the draft lottery again in 1993, despite having the lowest odds of any qualifying team, 1.52%. They drafted Chris Webber, then flipped him to the Warriors for Penny Hardaway and three future first-round picks. Despite that embarrassment of riches, the closest Orlando came to winning a title was getting swept by the Rockets in the 1995 finals. In the end game, the excitement of Week 18 of the NFL season, formerly Week 17, is all about the playoff scenarios. Before their final regular season game of the 2006 season, the 8-7 Chiefs were a long shot to make the postseason. They had to beat the 8-7 Jaguars. They also needed the 7-8 Steelers to top the 8-7 Bengals, the Titans to lose to a Patriots team that had already clinched, and, unlikely as all, the 6-9 49ers to beat the 9-6 Broncos. The Chiefs beat the Jags by 5, then watched as the Steelers won in overtime and the Titans lost despite the Packs playing 43-year-old Vinny Testaverde in the fourth quarter. The 49ers then came back and kicked an out a field goal to send a very fortunate Kansas City to face Peyton Manning in Indianapolis, where all the luck in the world couldn't save them. Faded for the field. Jack Lucky Locker earned his nickname. The infielder's pro career was delayed by World War II, during which he survived a transport train crash, the Allied invasion of Normandy, and the Battle of the Bulge. He was bumped off his first flight home from the war, and the plane crashed. Then in the minors in 1946, he was called up by the Padres in the middle of a bus ride. He got off when he received the news of their next stop. The bus then fell 300 feet down a ravine and caught on fire. Finally, in 1947, the man who cheated death time and again made his debut for the New York Giants, for whom he had a somewhat unlucky .235 batting average on balls in play. Hand of eye or eyes of ref. Diego Maradona's handball goal that opened the scoring in Argentina's 1986 World Cup quarterfinal game against England continues to generate controversy almost 40 years later. English players and fans consider it the ultimate act of cheating, for which Maradona never sufficiently apologized. For his part, Maradona called it revenge for the 82 Falklands War in which the United Kingdom defeated Argentina. Whatever one's view of the goal's sporting and political significance, all parties have to admit that it was pretty lucky. The referee plain missed it, and Argentina went on to win its second World Cup. The charmed life. Put aside the Celtics 1960 dynasty. Not even your parents were around to remember that one. You Boston kids are still the luckiest youngsters reading this magazine. Six Patriot Super Bowl wins under Tom Brady, three of which you might remember. Two recent Red Sox titles and the 2011 Stanley Cup. Even though you were an infant during the 07-08 Celtics run, the team has still been competitive your entire life. A wild card loss from the Pats under a stellar rookie season from Mac Jones counts as hardship for you. Do you even know the Red Sox used to be considered cursed? We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.